Gino Ogic joins us, one of the all-time fan favorites in Vancouver Canuck history. Gino, thanks so much for joining us today in story time. And we'd like to just kind of go through careers and everything. And, of course, you're from Quebec. That's where you grew up. You played for Hawkesbury and then the Laval Titans. But, Gino, as a young kid, was hockey always your sport? Or you know, did you play other sports that you loved?
I played hockey in the wintertime and fastball in the summertime. Everybody back home, they all played hockey in the wintertime, and we all played ball in the summer. And that's the only two sports that we played. I played a bit of lacrosse, but I wasn't very good at it, so I decided to stick with hockey and fastball.
Now, at fastball, Gino, what position were you, and were you a power hitter?
A little bit of a power. I played second base. I used to get some good hits, a couple home runs once in a while.
Gino, it's great to connect with you again, and thanks for doing this. You know, you growing up playing, you know, who did you and your buddies kind of look to and idolize growing up in Quebec?
Myself, it was Stan Jonathan. He was a First Nations player who played for the Boston Bruins, and because he was First Nations, I really liked him. And I also liked Chris Nyland from the Montreal Canadiens. Every time we played ball hockey, I was either Stan Jonathan or Chris Nyland jumping on guys and fighting for fun.
Yeah, those are two pretty tough guys to be role models, that's for sure.
Yeah, they were, and they did a good job back in the 80s and early 90s.
So, Gino, the physical nature, did that come natural to you, or were you just a physical player right from the early age playing sports, especially in hockey?
Well, what happened was one of my teachers told Bob Hartley that he had a big guy to play the rough stuff. I was playing back home on the reservation, and I was one of the best players. So when they called me to play junior, I thought I was going there to score goals. I found out pretty quick that it was a lot faster, and I had to find a role for myself. And I figured the best way to stick around was to do the enforcer role, because nobody else wanted to do it, and that allowed me to play junior hockey.
Yeah, you know, how big of a jump was that to get like your skills and feet and just processing the game? Was it a pretty big jump for you going from the reservation team up to the Quebec Junior Major League?
Well, I went to Hawkesbury, was junior A tier two. It was a huge jump. I was playing midget C back home, and we just played. We never practiced. Whenever we had practice, we just scrimmaged. So I never practiced in my life, and I always had to go last. I didn't know exactly what was going on, and it was a huge jump for sure. Good thing I was a big guy and I was able to play the enforcer role, or else I wouldn't have had any business there as a player whatsoever.
Gino Ogic joins us. And, well, Gino, obviously you put in the work, though, right? Because there's lots of guys that can be tough, but to play in the NHL, you still got, you know, and you scored 16 goals one year. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, you obviously put in the time to hone your skills. Did you have any coaches, either in Hawkesbury or Laval, that really helped you, you know, evolve your skills as a player?
Yeah, we had Paulin Bordeleau, who ended up coaching in the minors in Montreal. And in Tampa Bay with Jacques Demers, he came from Europe, and all his practices was skating and turning and stick handling, and it was all skills practices, and that really helped me to improve my skating and my stick handling, and he did a great job for me. I was really appreciative of what he did. He put me up on the first line with the two players we had, Donald Odette and Dennis Shalipu, who were goal scorers, but they were small players, and he put me with them, and I just rode shotgun, got a lot of ice time, and really developed as a player.
Talking with Gino Ogic, a longtime NHLer, and one of the guys that everyone who played with him just absolutely loved him, and the fans loved him as well. Gino, you get drafted by the Canucks in 1990. Was this on your radar at that time?
Well, I had a good talk with him, Ron DeLorme, who's the head scout.
Sure.
He was a First Nations guy, and he related to me, and we had a good conversation with Vancouver. I thought I was ranked to go the eighth or ninth round, so I thought I was going to go later in the draft, so they had a break after four rounds. I went to go eat, and they called my name while I was eating. one of the first players in the fifth round.
So did you just, what, you just dump your food out and quickly go run down? What happened?
I finished eating, and one of the guys came and got me, and I went down to the table, and we were allowed to make a call, so I called back home telling my parents I got drafted. They were really happy, and Ron DeLorme and Pat Quinn told me there was room for a player like me. Vancouver had a small team at the time, and all I had to do was show up and play my role, and I'd have a chance.
Gino Wojcik joins us in story time. So, Gino, you get drafted by the Canucks. You said, hey, if you play your role, you have a chance. Well, you only played 17 games in the IHL. You know, you're 20 years of age for the Milwaukee Admirals. You had 7 goals, 10 points in your first 7 games, Gino, in the IHL, so and 102 penalty minutes. So not only were you tough, man, you were producing right away at the pro level.
Yeah, we had a pretty good team in the minors, and they put me with the small guys, and they had a lot of skill, and I went to the net. I was getting rebounds and scoring goals. So it just worked out perfectly. One thing that you have to really know is when you get drafted, you got to get drafted to the right team that needs a player like you. You can get drafted in Detroit, let's say, and they got Bob Probert, and next thing you know, you're 5 years in the minors, and you haven't made your name for yourself yet. You really got to get lucky and get drafted to the right team where they need a player like you to come up fast. And they had played Calgary the night before I got called up, and they got roughed up pretty good. And Pat Quinn says, we're calling your guy. He told Ron DeLorme that. And so they called me that night. I had to leave at 5 o'clock in the morning the next morning. And the general manager was Phil Whitcliffe in Milwaukee. Came and picked me up and brought me to the airport, and I said, Phil, how long am I getting called up for? Well, he says, Babe Ruth got called up on an emergency basis, so basically it's up to you. So we played the Chicago Blackhawks that night. I got there at 2 in the afternoon, played the game, and I got in 2 fights with Dave Manson and Stu Grimson, and then I made a spot for myself on the team.
Gino, you're 20 years of age, man. Like, Dave Manson's tough, Stu Grimson. They call him the Grim Reaper, for goodness sakes. Like, were you nervous at all going in that first NHL game, or were you just riding adrenaline and excitement?
I was riding adrenaline. I mean, back in those days, the IHL was tougher than the NHL. They had, Carey Clark and Link Gates and Tony Twist. They were all in the IHL. I ended up fighting those guys already, so I knew it was all right. The IHL was just super tough in the 90s, and I just wanted an opportunity to play and make a name for myself.
So, Gino Wojcik joined us, longtime NHLer and obviously a fan favorite in many places. Gino, so after that first game, you've bullied your way or pushed your way into the league. Did you feel like if you just kept kind of pushing that part of it, working on your skills, that this you could play in that league? Was it that quick after that first game for you?
Yeah, I was getting 8 or 10 minutes of ice time a game, and I was doing my thing. The biggest thing I really wanted to do was to hit guys and make the other team uncomfortable, and guys come after me for hitting their players than me going out and getting challenged by other guys because they were hitting our guys. So I was really trying to do that, and it just worked out perfectly. They needed a guy like me, and I was able to make the team in my first year and get 12 years out of it.
Oh, Gino, you come into Vancouver, and in any city in the National Hockey League, what fans really respect the role that guys like you play, right? And, you racked up penalty minutes, but you weren't one of the players who only played 3 or 4 minutes, like, unfortunately for some tough guys. You had regular shifts. You know, there's games you're playing 13, 14 minutes and such. So it was, I'm assuming it was more fun, but talk about the relationship with the fans and how quickly you became a fan favorite and how fun that was.
Yeah, well, Vancouver had a small team for the couple years before I got there, and they're really getting pushed around. They had all the skill in the world, but they just weren't tough enough at that time, especially when bullies came into town and pushed them around. And the Vancouver fans are starving for a tough guy to come in and, you know, make things equal for the team. And it just worked out perfectly for me. I was that guy in Vancouver who came along and played the role.
Gino, was there anyone who liked scoring goals more than you? Because your reaction was, every time, it was like it was your first time.
Yeah, well, I had to work so hard to score them. But in practice, I always practiced my one-timers on the forehand and my one-timers on the off wing. And I really tried hard to score every time in practice. And whenever I did get a chance to score, I was really happy. Anybody who tells you that they're not happy when they score a goal, unless they're a 50-60 goal scorer, you know, you watch that and people are really happy when they score.
Gino Wojcik joins us. Gino, you and Pavel Bure became very tight in Vancouver. You talk about a guy who scored 60 goals, scored a lot of them, one of the most electrifying players. Just talk about the relationship and why you and Pavel, you know, became so close so quick.
Well, when you came into NHL and you were a rookie, you usually started off on the fourth line. So the first game we played, Pavel played with me and Ryan Walter. And needless to tell you, after the first game, we knew he wasn't going to stay with us for too long.
They didn't move the whole lineup, Gino?
Yeah, he moved up in the lineup in a hurry. You know, he got pushed around one night in against LA. There was a big defenseman, I forget his name, a European guy. I didn't know he was European. I thought he was a tough guy because he was pushing Pavel around. And I jumped in there and took care of the guy. And from that day on, we were best friends, you know, because I took care of him, protected him. And he really, whenever we had a two-on-one or a three-on-two, he would pass me the puck instead of shooting it so I can score a goal. It was just perfect chemistry. We were both young and single and really enjoying life, and we really had a good time playing hockey, both of us.
You know, Gino, it's amazing because, you know, Pavel obviously understood what you did to create space for him. And to hear that he went out of his way to make sure that you got your beak wet as well. I mean, was it unusual for a Russian player to understand that you got to give and take in a relationship like you and Pavel had as far as, you know, helping each other out in their own specific ways?
Well, you know, we had Larry Onoff, who was an ex-world-class player who was playing 10, 12 minutes a night before Pavel came, and as soon as Pavel came, Igor was getting 20 minutes a night playing with Pavel. And Igor really, you know, figured out that the best thing to do was pass Pavel the puck. And I got a chance when we played LA or Edmonton or Calgary. I'd usually move up and play with those guys, get 13, 14 minutes a night. And Pavel knew if he wanted me to stay there that I had to get some points, score a few goals, and get a few assists. You know, they don't play you that much on the first line if you don't produce. So he was really aware of that, and so was Larry Onoff. And I did my best to create room for him and make sure nobody touched him.
This, of course, made his NHL debut with the Canucks in 1990. I played with the Canucks, Islanders, Flyers, and the Montreal Canadiens. And then, of course, finished his career in Quebec, the Citadels, that year in 2001-2002. A lengthy career, 12 years in the National Hockey League. A lot of fights, had a few goals, career-high 16 goals in 1993-94. And a big reason why Pavel scored 60 that year. I'm sure Gino, he must have assisted on a few of those.
Yeah, I got a couple assists from our blue line in. Just give it to him on the breakout and then get the help for...
Like, playing with a guy like that, because there's very few players even now that were as explosive in their first few steps as Pavel Bure. He might be the quickest guy I've ever seen in those first few steps. It was amazing. How'd you learn how to play and adapt with a guy that was just that much faster than everybody else?
Well, whenever he was at the blue line, I'd go up to the red line, and he'd catch up to me, and we'd have a two-on-one or a three-on-two. I always made sure I was ahead of him. Because there's no way I was going to catch him from behind. So you really got to time yourself. And, you know, you figure he's going to beat the first guy all the time. You know, whoever you're playing with, you read off of. And when you're playing like a skilled player like that, you really got to get ahead of the play. And, you know, get yourself open. He used to always tell me, go to the far post and keep your stick on the ice. You're either going to get a pass or a rebound. And that's what I really tried to do, is go to the off post. Because when you're coming down on a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2, you don't want to be in the middle of the net. You got no room to score. So you got to stay wide and get the empty net when you get the puck.
Gino, you know, when I arrived in Vancouver, there was so much talk about how Pavel and yourself, you guys trained, and you're just, you know, really into that working out. It seems like it was really advanced for them, because not guys are working out, but maybe not like they are today. But, you know, was that something you brought to Pavel, or Pavel brought to you as far as the working out?
No, Pavel's dad was an Olympic. I was an Olympic swimmer, and they hired Pavel's dad to train Pavel, and I just jumped on board. And we used to train 6 days a week. 5 days a week was twice a week, cardio in the morning and weights at night. And on Wednesday, we'd only do it once, and then we'd have Sunday off. I was always the second fittest guy on the team. Pavel, I couldn't beat him, because he'd been training with his dad since he was young. And you know, the guys that are the best players usually are the most fit. We had Trevor Linden, that was one of our top guys, and he was in great shape. Martin Jelen is a guy that played with us, who's always in great shape. But the guys that are top first-line players usually train the hardest.
Gino, you had all that success. You're a fan favorite in Vancouver, and then you got traded in the 1997-98 season to the New York Islanders for my co-host, Jason Strudwick. And Strudwick's told his side of the story, and you know how the trade went down. And he said he was kind of irked because Gino's like, "Well, geez, I only got traded for Jason Strudwick."
No, that's not what I said. I said I got traded for a guy I don't even know his name. So we get on the ice that night, and the first shift out, Jason comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, my name is Jason Strudwick." I'm like, "Oh, shit, I got myself in trouble lipping off again."
We know it's funny, too.
Having the fight.
Yeah, we know it's funny, Gino. Let's talk first about, you know, there was so much emotion. I knew when I got traded for you that, like, you're a huge fan favorite. You loved it there and all that stuff, but it must have been pretty emotional for you. You know, it doesn't matter who you got traded, but it must have been pretty emotional, you leaving the place. You've been there for, what was it, 11, 12 years?
I was there for 8 years, but yeah. I knew I would get traded because Keenan, he was used to having guys like Stu Grimson and where he'd only play him 2-3 minutes a night, and if the tough guy on the other team was playing right wing, then he'd throw you at left wing, or if the guy was on the right wing, he'd throw you at left wing. So he's always hinting for you to fight, and he wouldn't give me any ice time, and I wasn't the type of guy that was going to just go out there and fight. I wanted to play and make a contribution, so me and Mike, it just didn't work out because we had a different philosophy on what a tough guy should be. So I knew I was going to get traded, but Pavel, I also knew it was his last year because he said he wasn't coming back. So I was like, shit, I got to hang on for the rest of the season here so I could get traded with Pavel at the same city. But they traded me at the trade deadline there to the Islanders. What happened was we played in Ottawa the game before, and Pavel and Keenan got into it on the bench. Keenan called Pavel a baby, and Pavel told him where to go, and so we get on the plane on the way, and I was sitting with Pavel, and Keenan comes back there to talk to Pavel, and he tells me, "Move, I got to talk to Pavel," and Pavel says, "Don't move." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm not going to move," and Keenan says, "Well, if he's not going to move, what I'm going to do, I'm going to trade your buddy, because you're pissing me off." And Pavel said, "Don't touch him." And next thing you know, I was traded the next night. But I knew that would be my last year in Vancouver. Just it wasn't the same philosophy, me and Mike Keenan.
Gino Ojik joins us. So, Gino, then you go to the New York Islanders, you know, very different, you know, from Vancouver, a Canadian city, into New York, and they had a great history, but, you know, it had been a few years. How was it for you just going to the, you know, to the United States? You know, I don't know if you've ever lived in the States prior to that. Was it a big change for you, or because you'd been in the league for so long?
It was a huge change. The Islanders at that time they were just, we had the smallest payroll in the league, and we had all young guys, Luongo, and it was all young guys, all players who ended up having good careers, but you can't have that many young guys all at once. But Milbury got me, and he says, I want you to be a good role model for the young guys and make sure nobody hits them. And so he played me with Tim Connolly and somebody else. So I ended up, I was getting lots of ice time and, you know, even playing on the power play once in a while in front of the net. So it was a lot of fun, you know. I was playing lots. I was trying to be a good teammate and, you know, showing the young guys that you got to train and you got to live properly and stuff. And I really enjoyed that role. I didn't want to get traded from the Islanders when I did got traded. I was really enjoying my time there.
Yeah, you know, then you do, you get to get traded, which is, you know, over to the Flyers, which is rare kind of in the division. But, you know, was it at a spot where you maybe didn't really want to get moved out of there and to that team?
Well, you know, you're going to the Flyers, you knew you were getting a chance to compete for the Stanley Cup, but it wasn't something like I wanted to get traded. I didn't want to get traded. I was enjoying myself on Long Island, and, you know, they got me to play with Lindros, and Lindros got hurt and ended up, you know, we still made it all the way to the Final Four that year. We got beat out by New Jersey, who ended up losing to Ray Bourque and Colorado Avalanche that year. But, you know, we got a really good chance to maybe get a ring and get a Stanley Cup, so you always got to be happy about that.
Gino, then, you know, kind of you come back to Canada for the final few years of your career with the Montreal Canadiens, and your last season with the Canadiens, you did play 13 games in the AHL, but you played 36 in the regular season, then 12 games in the playoffs for the Habs that season. When you went to the AHL, was that like on a rehab stint?
Yeah, I had a bad back, and I
couldn't,
you know, I'd bend over to tie my skates, and then I'd get all tightened up, so... You know, I asked him, I got to go down and get some playing time and get myself back in shape so I can contribute going down the stretch. And we agreed with Andre Savard, that's what we were going to do, and ended up working perfectly. I came back, and probably that was the best I ever played in my career as a player. Came back and had full confidence because I was playing lots in the minors. Ended up playing, 12 minutes a game on average, and we had a good run that year in the playoffs too.
So that's what I was curious, because I was looking up your numbers and your ice time. You played a lot, but then you didn't play again. What happened that summer that you didn't sign with anyone?
They signed me to a new 3-year contract. What happened was I was ready. I did my conditioning test. I was one of the top guys, which was normal for me. Then I went skating. In those days, or it's probably still that way, all the guys from Montreal, we'd skate together with other guys from the NHL, and we were skating, and I dropped the puck back to Andre Roy, who had a hell of a slap shot, but he shagged it and hit me behind the head and cracked my skull, so I got a really bad concussion, and I just couldn't pass the physical, so I had to retire because of a concussion that year. I had just signed a new contract. And, you know, that's why you got to really appreciate when you play in the NHL. It's such an honor and a privilege to play in the NHL because you never know when it could be over. I just came off the best playing I ever played, and the next thing you know, my career is over just like that. One thing that I didn't want to do, I always told myself, I don't want to be one of those guys who stick around too long. I was watching Probert at the end of his career. All the young guys were going after him, and guys were beating him that didn't beat him before because he was getting older, and I didn't want to be one of those guys who stuck around and then get these young guys coming after you and beating you and embarrassing you. I said that from the beginning of my career, and things worked out that I got a concussion and I didn't stick around too long. I was a better player when I retired than when I first came in, and I never was around for the slowdown period when everybody does slow down as they get older, but that didn't happen to me. I retired when I was 32, the last year I played, I was 31, so it worked out perfectly that way.
Gino Wojcik joins us. Gino, as I was Googling stuff before you came on, and I remember that, you know, 6-7 years ago, you were diagnosed with they called it a terminal disease at the time in 2014 with the condition AL amyloidosis, I think it's properly called, a hardening of the heart. And, you know, a lot of people were saying it's terminal. Now, I read statements from you saying, hey, I never once thought I was going to die. How scary was that time for you, and how is your health now?
Well, you know, the doctors in Vancouver basically told me to get my affairs in order, that I didn't have long to live because the protein was building up in my heart and the heart couldn't beat as well, and I could hardly walk 15 feet and I'd be totally exhausted. So they sent me to, I said, well, if I'm going to die, I'm going to go to Ottawa, so I'll be close to my family in Maniwaki. So my mom and my sisters and my kids could come and see me. So that's where I want to go. So I got the Canucks paid for a charter for me to fly home. So I was really appreciative of that. They didn't have to do that, but they did. And I flew home with my sister. And as soon as I got to Ottawa, the doctor says, I'm not treating you to die. I'm treating you to cure you. And I was like, wow, that's the first I heard that since this started, that doctor told me, and that he was going to try to fight for me to live. All the other doctors in Vancouver were telling me that was the end of the line for me and to get prepared for my demise. And so he tried an experimental drug, and we did chemotherapy, and the next thing you know, he says, you're going home. I couldn't believe it. You know, I did the chemotherapy for a long time, and next thing you know, it worked.
Well, that is fantastic, awesome. Gino, and it doesn't really surprise me. You know what? You worked your hardest in hockey to get where you were, and then, of course, fought for your life, and it worked. It's fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us today. That was one of the best interviews we've had in a while. I really appreciate your honesty and your candor, and we're happy to hear that you're healthy. And I know that in Vancouver, you're still a massive fan favorite. Oh, yeah. And the good news is you do know Strutty's name now, so that's good.
Yeah, I knew it as soon as I fought him. He was a good fighter.
Well, you know what's funny, Gino, is I remember when you were fought. I know you probably don't remember, but I was so, you know, hot and horny to try to get after it, and you kept holding my arm. I'm like, why is this guy holding my arm? And then just when I figured out you're tiring me out, you let go and just punched me to the ground. I'm like, oh, I knew it. Like, it was so funny. But, Gino, thank you for joining us. I was so looking forward to it.
When he came up to me, hi, I'm Jason Strudwick. He wants my big mouth got me in trouble again.
Gino, you're the best. Thanks for your time, man. I really appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.